welcome to the Grand Cast. This is season number 4, episode number 10, on Friday, February 23rd, in the year 2018. My guest this evening, Rachel Gleason. Thank you so much for being here, Rachel.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's going to be a good episode.
Yeah, I think so.
I like to start out each episode by going over the mission statement and the goals for the show. And the mission statement was revised for this episode. I've shortened it. So it is the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan through a series of conversations. Originally, I had As It Exists in 2017, because the initial goal of the show was to do a 1 year, very structured run.
Okay.
Which kind of spilt over into early 2018. So I had added in parentheses and early 2018, but all of that just seems unnecessary. So I'm cutting out the bits that are superfluous. I think that's the right word.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I've been looking up definitions of words more often and realizing that I don't actually know exactly what they mean all the time.
Yeah, sometimes I was saying words wrong for a long time before I realized.
Yeah, but thank goodness for smartphones. You can say, hey Siri, define superfluous. Oh, there you go. That's helpful.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, I guess I've also been trying to learn more about comedy in general, and with joke writing, a lot of it seems to be cutting out the unnecessary stuff.
Yeah, I'm learning that for sure.
I figured maybe that applies to mission statements also. I don't know.
Right.
And then I have two goals. The first I've been failing at miserably, which is to post one new episode weekly. I had a really good run for a lot of months, but maybe I need to revise my goal list also. Or maybe I just need to get better at producing episodes. I guess I have options. The second goal is to make at least 3 people's day better through the creation of quality content.
Nice.
So I started with just 1 person's day better, stepped it up a bit to 2, now we're at 3.
Right, yeah, why not?
Yeah. I think I've been a little conservative, so let's just bump that up to 4 right now. Is 4 people's day better through the creation of quality content? I guess it's important to revise goals also.
Yeah.
Gradually become more ambitious or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you like reach goals, you should always like move it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Why not?
Can't get complacent with the goals.
Nope. Sometimes a little bit, but
yeah, it's okay to relax too.
Yeah. I found that when I'm making like a to-do list or like a list of goals, like instead of erasing it from the list when it's reached or completed, cross it off. So then you can see like on the list that there's all the stuff crossed off that you've done. It's not just like a constant list that's always the same size.
That's why like instead of New Year's resolutions, I like to just brag about everything I did in the last year.
Hey, there you go. New Year's accomplishments.
I need these cool things, but I'm not going to set anything new right now.
Set secret goals.
Right.
Huh. I like that. So getting into the interview, Rachel, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color in like nature is green. But I really like purples, and I actually like when you can see like purples in nature too, like in like tree bark and stuff like that. Like that's always been really pretty to me. So purple and green probably.
Are there particular shades of purple and green that you enjoy the most?
Green I think is mostly just like the summer grass tree leaf green. And purple, I like bright purple.
Like a neon purple?
Almost, yeah. Like when things are so white, sometimes they look a little purple, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cool.
If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Ooh. I feel like I think about this a lot and it changes a lot. So depending on the day thing, maybe right now, jellyfish are one of my favorite. And like I pick that sometimes today. I'm feeling that too because they're like ethereal and like just kind of floaty, but also like really beautiful, but lethal. And they don't have brains and they just kind of like flounce around and they're like kind of eternal, I guess. Oh. I think, I don't know. Yeah. They get real old, I think. I saw something recently about one that like is immortal or an something. It keeps jellyfish? Regenerating. Yeah.
Oh man. It's a little scary.
I would have to, to be honest, I just saw it, you know, on Facebook. I didn't click the link. It could be completely untrue, but I like the idea.
Yeah. There's so much about the oceans that we just don't know.
Yeah.
You ever watch the BBC David Attenborough documentaries?
I don't know that I have.
Oh, there's some on Netflix. They're really good. They go into like crazy underwater places and all over and find things that people haven't really seen before.
Maybe I have seen some of those where they go in like the deep crevices and I think I have seen that. Yeah.
Definitely pretty cool to see. What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like my family was really fun. My dad was just a big kid, and so I feel like he made me laugh a lot at an early age. So yeah, probably him. I can't think of like a moment in like a theater or watching, probably SNL too. We went to church early on Sunday morning, so like that was kind of a thing that we would only get to do sometimes, or like, and we would sneak into it. So.
And how did you first get involved in performing comedy?
I did improv in high school. We had an improv club and I did that. And, that was probably the earliest. But we just tried to make a movie making fun of our teachers. Like it wasn't like it was improv, but it was also just like a bunch of annoying kids like acting dumb. So yeah, that was probably the earliest.
And like more out in public, how did you get started with that?
That was through Aaron Betka. We've been friends since like 2013, and she kept trying to get me to do stuff with No Outlet, and I was like, no, like improv. I hadn't done improv since high school, and I was just like, I don't think that's for me. Like that seems like a lot of pressure, and it just scared me. And then when the Comedy Outlet Underground started, it was one of the first shows, and she had me open, and I just like did a poem and a song, and then the next time she asked me to do like something again, and I was like, well, I might just try stand-up. So I just told a sex dream I had about James Earl Jones, and that was cool. Like that was like the first like stand-up I ever did, and it was just that story, and it was really fun. I liked it. And so I think I'd already joined Funny Girls at that point too, maybe right around the same time was when Funny Girls started, and I was like, sure, I'll get on board with this because I could do like sketch. Like it was more than just improv, so it seemed like something I could handle.
Yeah, they do everything.
Yeah, it's fun.
Was it James Earl Jones as a film character or just as an...
It was as himself. I like met him at a hotel and it was like, it was super realistic too. Like I thought it was really happening. So that's why I was like going with it because I wanted to brag about it. So it wasn't, yeah. So it was kind of like one of those type things. But yeah, it was an interesting dream.
Did he do the Darth Vader voice?
I feel like we didn't talk very much.
That's fair. So you mentioned Funny Girls. So let's talk about Funny Girls.
Yeah.
I need to rewrite. Well, I should rewrite the prompt because it's extremely vague. But what I'm actually asking is for you to please talk about. I just like the way Let's Talk About sounds.
Yeah. I like that too.
So that'll be a recurring issue with some of these.
No, that's cool. When you said it, I wasn't sure. And then I was like, all right. Cool. Yeah, Funny Girls is awesome. It really allowed me to start doing comedy and put my toes in the water. And then like it just grew so fast and became something more than we thought it was. And so then it was like, okay, we need to make sure we're producing quality content and like all of that. And so it was kind of like, it was great for me as a beginner, but now I feel like it's even evolved from what we thought it was going to be originally. And it's just incredible to work with these women that are hilarious and just awesome people. And I love doing shows with them. They're ones that I love their sketches and I love the way they write. And I always want to act like in those sketches and like do these weird, dumb things. Like last night, Kristen Hirsch wrote a sketch called Stupid Cupid. And so I played Cupid and was in a Depends diaper, and like a sash and like just in my bra and like being ridiculous. And it was so much fun. And then the sketch got so much more ridiculous than that because she's so absurd. And it's so much fun to just play, and have it be something that people enjoy also. Cause it really just feels like we're playing and having fun. Like I'm playing with my friends.
And that was last night at the Fuse Box.
Yes.
And there's a monthly Funny Girl show.
Yes, there is a monthly Funny Girl show. Yep, every month we have our dates set out. I can't remember when April's is because we just did our March show. But yeah, it's new content every month. We're also going to be working on putting out more videos that will come out more often than that. But yeah.
You can find them all over the internet. We, the letter R, Funny Girls. Yeah. This isn't really a question, and I wasn't sure how to turn it into a question, so I'm just going to say sketch comedy versus stand-up and improv.
Okay. I think sketch is something I'm, like, most comfortable in that I enjoy. And I've been doing stand-up, and I also have enjoyed that, but I'm almost getting to the place where I'm like, okay, I did something that scared me, and now it's just starting to feel more stressful than enjoyable. And so I think the next step is to really scare myself in the thing I've been putting off the most, which is improv. And I've already told Erin that I wanted to do that more, and I think she's going to hold me to it. So it's something that's scary, but I think that I could be good at it. I'm just not, haven't let myself, like, be scared by it yet, so... I'm going to let it scare me.
Good. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Tom Mayer does a weekly kind of like coaching practice.
Oh, cool.
At Dog Story. Unfortunately, Mondays at 9. Unfortunately okay. For you.
Right, yeah. Because Mondays don't work, yeah.
Drunken Retort.
Right.
But for anyone else, if you want to try improv, Dog Story Theater has a free improv jam every Monday at 8. And then... Tom has the kind of practice class at 9. Both those are free every Monday. Let's talk about the Drunken Retort.
Yeah. The Drunken Retort is an open mic that's based in spoken word. It's every Monday at 9 o'clock at Stella's Lounge. Doors open at 8. There are 14 open mic slots. Which can fill up quick sometimes, as well as seating. So getting there at 8 is like probably a good idea. It's a super fun show. One where really like the audience is there to see the art and to respond to the art. I remember when it first started, before I was hosting it, I fell in love with it immediately. I was like, wow, people are cheering for poetry. Like, you think this is as cool as I do. So it's like a nerdy, but also really fun. It's a community, I think, too, where you... just listen to people's stories and people empowering themselves through telling their story, whether it's music, poetry, and wit comedy also. And yeah, every second Monday of the month is a poetry slam, which is different than just spoken word. Slam means it's a competition. So we're creating our team to send to nationals. So March is the finals, which is the top 10. And we are competing to form the top 5 will be the team that we send to nationals in Chicago this year. So, yeah, it's a lot going on. It's a great time. Yeah.
Is the competition improvised poetry, or how is it, like, what makes it competitive?
There are 5 random judges. So basically, random people just judge you on your poem and your trauma, basically. No. And yeah, for content and for how you perform it, it's on a scale of 1 to 10. And then, yeah, there's like usually 3 rounds. So it's not improvised. It's a poem that usually is prepared And some people will come in and like freestyle, but that's rare.
Okay. So does, are there like different stages? Like, are there different themes of poems or?
There are some nights where we have short shit nights, and that's where the poem has to be. Oops.
Sorry, Josh. Sorry, Matt. Sorry, Katie.
That was my ring.
Sorry, Ryan. Sorry, Sean.
The poem has to be 2 minutes or under, and then there's another one where it's 1 minute or under. Otherwise, they're generally 3 minutes and under. So the shorter ones, it's to at the national level for individual World Poetry Slam and Women of the World Poetry Slam, they have bouts that are for shorter poems. But nationals with the team is all 3 minute poems. Hmm. So it's not really like a theme night. It's just pretty much any poem you bring, you perform it and see how people like it. So it's kind of, kind of subjective.
Do those get like broadcast online or anything?
We, for finals, we record finals night the whole night. And then we do make a CD to sell for a fundraiser to help send the team to nationals.
Okay.
So they are recorded. Other than that, it's only on finals that they're recorded.
And I was also wondering about, like, I've been to the Drunken Retort a few times, and one thing that really caught me was the whole audience participation, like the snapping and like the hand rubbing.
Right. Oh, yeah. The callbacks and stuff.
Yeah. Like, I was wondering if you could go through, like, I don't know if there's like so many that you can't go over all of them. But just like the big ones, like that people would notice.
For sure. Yeah. We encourage people, like, there are actually rules that we do at the beginning. That's like the yell rule, the bell rule, the swell rule, and the tell rule. And so it's like, just talking about getting people energized and like responding to the poetry to like, hey, it's okay to be loud and respond to this. And you can do that by snapping or like clapping or cheering. So like even in the middle of a poem, the poet is feeling the energy from the crowd. Sometimes people will say what, and like rewind. And then like, so they want you to like say the line again, like your line was so cool. They want you to say it again. Yeah. So it's pretentious and fun. But there's the hand rubbing is if someone has forgotten their poem or trips up, and it's to just kind of like encourage them. It's like an encouraging where everyone just kind of is like, you got it. Just like take a step back and think about it. So it's like a supportive thing. We do have boo bells. The second rule is the bell rule. And that's if you don't like what someone is doing, which is we try to convey, like, doesn't mean like you disagree with them politically or like whatever. It's like if it's really crappy, like if it sucks, the art itself, then you can ring a bell. And if the person gets three bells from three different people, they're booed off the stage and everyone yells, get the fuck off the stage.
Does that happen often?
It happened last week a lot because it was Black History Night, and we had several people that were not people of color sign up on the list. And like, we kind of told them like, oh, this is Black History Night. Like, I wasn't even hosting. I was like, I'm just gonna sit and watch. And like, so whenever someone came in and was like, where's the list? I was like, oh, just so you know, it's Black History Night. But there were like some people that, and it wasn't even just because they were white and doing it, because like, we definitely like, whatever, everyone can do it. But there are some people that were just like bad, and like, so the everyone wasn't having it because they were already like, this is a special night. And like, yeah. So last week it happened a little bit more often, and sometimes it will like happen a ton. Sometimes we'll go weeks and weeks and there's no bells at all. So it's really depends on who signs up and how bad they are.
Huh. That'd be kind of disheartening, I think, like if it was your first time up and you
got... Oh yeah. And we try and say too with the bell, it's not personal. It's to help you grow as an artist, to know when you're losing an audience. And so we've had people come back and get better and better, and like in a lot of ways the bells have helped them. But it is kind of like got that gong show like intense, and so it isn't for everybody as far as performing goes. But it's a lot of fun to be a part of.
Yeah, I love how interactive it is.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And that's every Monday at Stella's downtown in, what do they call it? The backside or something?
Yeah, it's in the back room, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's free to get in?
It is free to get in. Free 99.
Anyone can sign up?
Anyone can sign up.
And they have good vegetarian and vegan food options.
Yes, and tons of whiskey.
Some good beer on tap.
Oh, yeah. Decent enough beer on tap.
Yeah. And fun stuff on the TVs.
Yeah. When it's some weird stuff in the corners. Yeah.
Performance time. For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
I think... there are great things about all of them. And it really depends on so many things. I was going to say stand-up if it's like, you know, one of my favorites. Someone that will just have me continuously laughing. And then who? Probably improv. Like who? I'm trying to think of locally too, because I was thinking, I just saw the Chris Rock special on Netflix and I really enjoyed that. I was cracking up at that. Locally, I mean, Kara Williams she's also one of my best friends, but like, I feel like I consistently am just like laughing through the whole set. And I've learned a lot from her too. And she just cracks me up, like in life in general. Like, I love going out with her and being like snarky and like just having fun, people watching. Definitely Kara. And then I think improv I like next, or like about tied. So just the like surprise factor. And you like, you never know like where it's gonna go.
It's got a little bit of that audience participation too.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Maybe not enough, I don't know. So you mentioned earlier, I didn't find out about this in my research at all.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned growing up in a cult?
Yeah.
Like a Mormon cult, or like more serious?
It was like, we didn't live on a compound or anything. And like not like floor length denim skirts or anything. But it was just a really small evangelical Christian church that was a branch off of Pentecostal. So super intense worship practices, and being forced to interact and worship like that as a child. And there is this competition aspect to it. So there is definitely some dangerous power aspects going on. And once people left, like a lot of the young people would leave when they were like 18 or 19, because they were like, all right, well, I don't got to do this anymore, so I'm gone. And then that made them get stricter and stricter, and those people were shunned. Mm. And like, so it, I don't know by like definition, because I've read lists to see like, oh, guidelines to see if you're in a cult. And like, it fit a lot of them. And some of those like stipulations, if you will, were somewhat vague, but, yeah, I definitely, most people who have left call it a cult.
Hmm. Was there like a leader figure, or was it more?
We had two pastors, so the pastor and his wife, and she wasn't ordained at first. She became ordained later on, and they as a couple formed this really unique kind of power structure, where he was very charismatic, very warm, very friendly, very charming, like that side of things. And she had this like authoritative stance, on Sunday mornings while we were all worshiping, she would be out like up on the platform just like staring at everybody, like watching everyone worship while she was like worshiping. But like just the sense of like, it seemed like more of the power, there was a weird power dynamic that was coming from her. And she was the one who was the most controlling, like that stupid saying of like, he's the head, but she's the neck kind of thing. And it was interesting too, because my Sunday school teacher's family left a few years ago, like 9 years after I left. And so my Sunday school teacher had been responsible for most of like the spiritual abuse I experienced. But we met and she like apologized and I like forgave her. And she, you know, just talked about like her from her perspective. And it was just like, she said that one Halloween, the pastor was a wizard and his wife was a spider. And like that, if that isn't a metaphor for like them as people, like it's, that's, just too perfect. Like, they must be not self-aware at all, or like really self-aware and like,
it was kind of a meta
toeing
joke.
The line. Yeah. What, you guys get it? So yeah, it definitely impacted my life, like, and influenced me more than any other aspect.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think that's why improv scares me, actually. Like, a lot of that comes from as a kid growing up and then being like, be weird for God, go. You know, and having your, like, soul be on the line of, like, the kids who were, like, because I was a performer, so I could do it. But the kids who, like, you know, were introverted and quiet and weren't going to, like, speak in tongues because you told them to, like, they were seen as, like, not close to God. And, like, so there was this weird competition of, like, the kids who could, like, perform and do what they wanted. And they were, like, praised and, like, the power structure. Like, it was really messed up. Even like as a kid, to look back at it now, I remember just like being dreading going. But at the same time, it was normal.
That's all you had known, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
So it was, yeah, it was an interesting, it was a unique childhood, I would say.
Yeah.
So that hopefully that breeds comedians and artists, at least. I gotta give credit where it's due.
Yeah, it's a lot of source material. What is a good movie that you've watched recently?
Oh, okay. It's not really a good movie, but there was a movie about Bonnie and Clyde on recently. And I just love like that time period. And I love those like anti-hero. So like, I really enjoyed it, but it was also kind of like, not like the greatest in as far as films go, but it was entertaining. And it was, I learned more than I had known about the story before, which I thought I had known a little bit. But it was cool. I like history, so.
You know the name of it?
I think it was just Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, was that like on Netflix or?
Yeah, I found it on Netflix. Nice. In like, I think it was like in critically acclaimed movies. So I guess maybe it was okay. It was pretty good.
They're the bank robbers, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what I didn't know was that like Bonnie made sure that like when they first robbed a bank together, the reporter said, Clyde's name and his female companion. Oh. And she showed up at the reporter's house with a gun and was like, my name is Bonnie and you're putting my name first. Like, she was a badass and like, yeah. She was the one like with the shot. Like, she like probably was the more violent of the, she wanted to be famous. She'd been rejected as like, oh. She wanted to be a movie star. And so this was her like fame, like that she had been looking for. So she, it was really interesting. It was good.
Huh.
I don't want to give any spoilers, you know, but it doesn't end well for Bonnie and Clyde.
Check it out on Netflix to find out more. Huh. It's just interesting, like, if someone doesn't get the chance to, like, to try to achieve their dreams, then they can turn to something like that.
Right. Well, at the time, because they were, like, a lot of the people that were, like, trying to stop them were, like, we've been glorifying this, like, mobster. Like, it was something that was what the movies were about, and so she just did it in real life. Yeah,
yeah.
She was like, "All right, I'll kill some people."
Hmm. And what is a good streaming show that you've watched recently?
I don't know that I have. I've been watching a lot of movies recently. Because when I would watch, like, I would have like The Office on or like Parks and Rec or things like that, and just like. Because I work a lot from home, and so sometimes I would have something like that on that I'd already seen a million times, and I could just kind of ignore, but have something on in the background.
Yeah.
But then I found that I was working on some other things, and having like these movies were actually more creatively inspiring because they were at least interesting to watch, like as far as cinematography and whatever.
Is there a genre of movie that you enjoy the most?
I think I like, they're either like dramas or dark comedies or dramas that have like comedy, because I like that like realism and real life sucks, but it's also funny at the same time. Like, you have to laugh at some crazy stuff.
Yeah. You either have to laugh or cry.
So. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. What is comedy to you?
Comedy to me is seeing the absurdity in life and like being able like to laugh at these ridiculous things, these commonalities that, you know, these ridiculous things that we do on a day-to-day basis that they become mundane. But when you break it down, like, there's so much humor and nuance, like, in these things. So to me, comedy is drawing that out and shining a light on it. Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Just got to refill the beers. This is a beer called The One, a West Coast IPA from Final Gravity Brewing in Decatur, Michigan. If you're ever south of Pawpaw.
Ah.
Stop by there.
Good old Pawpaw. Yeah, I had never heard of Decatur until you said it. Isn't there a Decatur, Ohio? Is that what sounded familiar? I don't know.
I think there might be like a Decatur, Missouri.
Yeah, that sounds right too. Maybe there's all of them.
Lots of Decaturs.
Maybe Decaturs everywhere.
I wonder what it means. If it's French for something?
Sounds like it could be. I don't know.
Might have to Google that later. If you knew for absolute certain that 1 year from now, humanity would go extinct, how would you spend that time? And nobody else knows.
Oh, cool. Okay. I was like, well, probably panicking with everybody, fighting for resources. I think I would go... I can't decide if I'd want to, like, stay and be with everybody and, like, keep going on like normal and just enjoying it more, or if I'd want to, like, just go somewhere tropical and hang out and then just, like, enjoy the earth. If no one else is going to for a while, because so many people are so busy, and if they don't know it's all going to end for humanity, like, I don't know, just, like, at least appreciate life somewhere warm.
You like the ocean?
Yeah, I do. I've only recently, I think it was like 2 years ago, I went to Costa Rica, and that was the first time that I had like been in the ocean.
What part did you go to?
We went all over. We did not have any plans. When we got to customs, the lady was like, where are you going to go? And I was like, I was also very drunk. Like, it was my friend's birthday, and so we, like, just landed very drunk.
In San Jose?
Yeah, in San Jose. And I was just like, I don't know where we're going. We literally didn't plan anything. And she was like, just say this city. So the first night we ended up in Montezuma. Almost didn't have a place to stay. That was a good time. And then we went to Tamarindo, which was really fun. Another, like, surf city where we're tourists. Like, both of those were pretty touristy. And then we went to just, like, my friend got an Airbnb, like, treehouse at this, like, hot springs resort. So it was, like, you know, they had a few treehouses. But, like, it was super cool. And that was, yeah, I'm not sure, like, which rainforest or, like, where exactly. But it was by a volcano. There are hot springs, yeah.
Was that Arenal?
I don't think so. Wait, is that the name? Was it a volcano?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That was a volcano, and it was like pretty near there. But the first night, again, we almost didn't find a place to stay. We were circling the lake. We had no idea where we are because we'd gotten there in the dark. And everything was closed. But we came across a B&B and like basically begged them to let us stay. And like, I guess they had a cancellation, so they like got us in. We woke up in the morning and it was like we were on the lake and there was this volcano across the lake and it was just like gorgeous and we were like, this is awesome. And then we went to the hot springs and then we went back to San Jose for the night and like partied at a bar. It was like empty because it was a Monday night.
Did you go to the Tabacón hot springs?
I don't think so. I can't remember the name of the place where we were. That's terrible. Yeah,
that's the big one in Arenal.
Okay, it might have been then.
I lived in Costa Rica
for did you?
5 years.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yep. So I've been around.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So driving around was scary.
The mountains are terrifying.
We almost went over a couple of times. Like, there was literally a time where, like, the back tire, like, me and Roach were in the back seat, and we were like, we looked at each other, and then just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was terrifying, but it was so fun.
It's an adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about local. Why is local important?
Local is important because, like, this is our community. And if you want it to be a good community, then you have to take a part in that and hopefully be, you know, a positive change in that local and support other people who are local. And in that way, also, if you're supporting local artists, then like, if you don't support them, no one else from other places will either. So I think that investing in local communities, like, puts Grand Rapids on the map for things like comedy and poetry, and draws in more people who can then experience that. And I think it's great. And I think that all the communities that I've been a part of, as far as comedy and other artistic communities, have all been really supportive and just really great. And I think that's a beautiful thing, to be able to take pride in your fellow man and in your city.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk about playing music.
Yeah. Like music that I play?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't been doing it much lately, but yeah, I play guitar and sing. I taught myself guitar just in order to accompany myself. So I'm not the best guitarist, but I like to write songs and sing. And, like, I only learned a few covers, but there's a few covers that I like to play too.
What are your favorites?
House of the Rising Sun and Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow are probably my...
Who's the original artist for that one?
No, I can't remember what her name is. I'm losing it. Because there have been a few people, I think, that have done that one too.
Yeah.
Like,
I can hear it
in
my brain, but I can't place the...
Yeah, I feel terrible.
What does it mean to be a comedian?
I think it means being able to laugh at yourself and to make other people laugh in whatever way that is.
And who are some of your role models?
I think that I didn't, when I was younger, I used to be terrified of Miss Hannigan on Annie. And I remember, like, a certain age when I was probably like 12 or 13, when I realized she's hilarious and Carol Burnett is awesome. And, like, so I feel like she was one of those two. And then also knowing, like, how her being on the forefront of comedy and when women weren't, you know, visible or accepted, and she was hilarious and shameless and just willing to, yeah, to go to those weird places and take us with her. So she's probably number one.
Nice. What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
Oh, I like Luna a lot. I haven't been there in a while. Taqueria. I just thought of that. Because I had tacos earlier tonight. And they were good.
Ionia.
Yes, on Ionia.
Next to what used to be McFadden's.
The Waldron now. Yeah. Yep. And I usually get, like, chicken tacos and the elote thing, the corn stuff.
I like
is
the
good
street
too.
Corn with the cheese.
Yeah,
and,
like,
oh,
mayo,
yeah.
Or something. I don't even know. But it's good. What else do I like? I just went to Georgina's, and that's a new place on Wealthy.
Yeah.
And it's a little fancy. It's a little pricey.
It is.
And I went there with someone and ended up paying for both of us, which was fine. But it was like, ooh, all right. Like, I wouldn't go there, like, a lot. But it was really interesting mix of, like, South American and Asian cuisine. And it was super good. Like, super good.
What'd you get there?
It was just like a chicken plate, but it had, like, you know, it came with a plantain and definitely had, like, Thai influence as well as, like, other stuff. I don't know. It was very good.
The fried plantains? Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I got to fell in love with those in Costa Rica.
Yeah, that's
so
a
then
staple
I was like,
there.
Yeah, for sure.
I went to Georgina's once so far, and I got the, like, the pork shoulder with the... Like the pickled cabbage and the yuca. Really, really good.
Nice.
It was a little pricey, but it was a very generous
serving. Yeah, it was. Food. Oh, I was stuffed. And it was it was worth it. I like to try different stuff. So it's worth it to try like really well-made like food that you don't get to experience other places.
Yeah. I was impressed. I'll be back. That's over on Wealthy, right by Elk Brewing and Johnny B's and Donkey Taqueria and the Winchester. All fantastic.
Yeah.
Restaurants.
Yep.
Or breweries. Because I think they stopped serving food at Elk, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I don't... Yeah, I haven't been there that much.
Yeah. It's... They have some good beers sometimes.
Yeah.
They got a new guy who's brewing at this location because they moved the main brewing over to Comstock Park when they opened that new spot. So they have a guy doing like smaller batches at the Wealthy Street one. And some of those beers are quite good.
Cool. Yeah. I'll have to go back and try some.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
I think when, like, doing a sketch that you are struggling not to laugh while you're doing it, it's one of my favorite things in the world is to be laughing when you're not supposed to be laughing, because it's like you hate it, but it's also like the funniest. It's the funniest shit ever when you can't express it, and so you're just holding back this like. Yeah, I just love that. And so I love that when performing, when, you know, in stand-up, you can kind of laugh at yourself. And so that can be a fun part of it. But in sketches, when you can't. And when you break, when someone else breaks. If I make someone break, that's fun.
Do you do much stand-up?
I've done quite a bit. I was mostly doing it at Funny Girls. Just at our shows. And I haven't really done many open mics, but I've done some shows in Lansing. I did a show in Holt.
Where's Holt? It sounds familiar, but I can't tell you.
I feel like it's east, southeast.
They passed Lansing or around Lansing? Mm-hmm.
It's like south of Lansing, quite a bit south of Lansing. And it was, there was a 7 o'clock show and a 9 o'clock show. And the 7 o'clock show was not my demographic, not my crowd. I was telling I have weird sex dreams a lot. So I told the James Earl Jones, and then I have also even more recently than that had a sex dream about ET.
Oh,
the extraterrestrial. So I was talking about that, and they
Reese's Pieces.
Right. So yeah, they did not care for me and what I had to say at the 7 o'clock show, and it was painful. But yeah, so Lansing, Holt. On Wednesday night, Kara Williams and Megan Elaine and I of Funny Girls, as well as some, Mike Logan, Garrett,
Elzinga.
Yeah. Garrett Elzinga, Nolan Graff, and, what's his name? Michael Bustler.
Yeah.
So it was a fun lineup. It was at the Knickerbocker and it was packed. And I think that was the first time they had done a comedy night there. And I think they're going to bring it back. And I think Mike Logan might actually end up hosting that.
Oh, great.
For the next one anyway. I don't want to make assumptions, but that's what I heard, that he would at least be hosting the next one.
Excellent.
So that was a lot of fun. The room, it did get crowded and rowdy. So like toward the end there, it was a very long show also, but it was super fun. And you know, it was a good time. So yeah, here and there. But yeah, I feel like I might be taking a step back from that for a little while.
Yeah, there's Mike's hosting an open mic on Mondays
at
the Garage Bar, a little north of downtown. Show starts at 8:39. Check them out on Facebook to find out for sure. There's a lot going on Monday nights.
Yeah.
A lot of competition.
Right? It's a busy night now.
Yeah.
I think everyone was like, oh, people don't, there's not that much going on Monday. And now it's like, oh man, there's, we all have the same idea.
Yeah. Mondays, you got Dog Story, the Comedy Outlet Mondays at 7 p.m. We got Drunken Retort 9 p.m. at Stella's.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Garage Bar open mic stand-up comedy sometime 8:30, 9.
8:30 or 9.
Around there. Probably 9. Be there by 8:30.
Yeah, just yeah.
Then Tuesdays, Tip Top Deluxe, mm-hmm. open mic comedy starts at 9. Wednesdays at Fulton Street Pub. I'm not sure what time that starts. Talk to Trebuchet. I don't think there's anything Thursdays right now that I can think of.
Nothing's ringing a bell for me on that one either.
Hmm.
If you want to see awkward teenagers do poetry, that's all access open mic.
Where's that?
That's at Mayan Buzz Cafe at 8 p.m., hosted by Wayne Bowerman.
On Thursdays?
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
So we tell our, like, I go into schools and do poetry stuff, and we tell our students about that one. And it's, yeah, it's also a really great, fun show. Great for people who are not yet 21.
Ah. Have you ever been to Story Cafe?
I haven't been to any open mics there, but I think I had been there.
And it's up on Leonard by yeah. the Mitten.
Mm-hmm.
They do open mics for, I think, like, just general open mics for whatever you want to do. And then they do an improv night, I think, once a month. And it's a fun little space. And I've only been once, but I want to get back. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
And it's like a coffee shop, too. So you can
yeah.
get a nice little, what I have. I had a chai tea latte.
Oh, okay. I love chai tea lattes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tasty. What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
I think probably laughing with others, and, you know, laughing harder when people are laughing, and like just that build that can happen, the contagious laughter. And yeah, like laughing so hard you cry sometimes. Like, it's the best feeling in the world to laugh.
Yeah. I forgot there's an open mic Sundays at
Fulton
Street Pub that Joe from Pyramid Scheme hosts.
Oh, okay. Is that the new Sunday Night Funnies? Or is that...
That's different.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where that is.
I thought they were doing that again too, but I don't know where.
I saw a thing on Facebook that they were, but I don't know who or where the deal with that is.
I just heard a little rumor. Rumor weed.
That's the underground stuff, so.
Right. Cannot confirm or deny.
You ever go to Fictional Friends Improv at Mulligan's every Wednesday, doors at 9, show at 9:30?
I've been to that once, and then we were having our Funny Girls like rehearsals and shows those nights.
Yeah.
So I didn't end up getting to go to those very much.
It's a great show and free.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday. Or if you want to practice with them and be in the show, that starts at 7. They got a workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every Wednesday. They said their 3-year anniversary.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So the final question of the interview portion of the show, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Get out now. Of the cult is what I was referring to there. That was a callback to that time. Probably that sounds so cheesy, but like, you'll be okay. Yeah, at that time I was struggling with like my faith and my sexuality and like a ton of stuff, and everything was terrifying, and that everything is, you're experiencing the worst thing in the world. But yeah, that you'll be okay, and better than that, you'll be great.
Thank you. And I've been meaning to set up a musical transition into the break, mm-hmm. but I haven't had time yet. So if you wouldn't mind, please doing any sort of performance, whatever you're feeling, and then ring the bell to let me know that you're done.
Oh, dang.
Please.
All right. I don't know what to do. I got to put me on. Sure. I told you, like, improv. I got to go.
You can take a moment and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no time restrictions.
All right. Maybe I'll say a short poem then, if I can remember it, if that's okay.
That would be fantastic.
All right. My mother used to tell me I was too clumsy for my own good, that I never paid attention to my surroundings, but maybe I wanted to tornado myself through our fragile home like the storm of words that broke so many hopes inside of me. And maybe I should apologize to all of the small things that I broke in order to feel powerful. Every crayon in the pencil box when I was 3 years old, just because I could and it felt good. The countless sticks I cracked against the trunks of towering silver maples when I wanted to feel as free as their dancing leaves. My mother's heart when I was 19 and I just wanted to be me. Sometimes my tornado is a ghost that gets away from me. And some things are made to be broken, like hollow sticks and mother's hearts. And sometimes I'm sorry is the gentle rain after my storm. And sometimes there is no sorry at all, just silence and debris.